As usual happens in this case, a person never seeks such a position.
This is an interview with Dr. William R. Wood, President of the University of Alaska, on Friday, September 24th, about his first 11 years at the University of Alaska.
Dr. Wood, a man comes to the position as president of the university with certain perspectives and many of the ideas of how he might best carry out the function of the presidency. Do you remember your goals and the directions you outlined for yourself when you began here at the university?
I doubt that one comes to presidency of a university that he's that clear-cut in his assumptions that he can do great things for an institution or for the people it serves. I did, however, come to Alaska not by chance, but by design. I really wanted to come, and fortunately I had an opportunity. Frankly, I had, on two other occasions in my life, tried to make it here. One, when I was just out of college in the late 20s, and I applied to teach in the rural schools, and I got various forms, but I didn't get a job. In those days there was a surplus in the profession, and I was a part of the surplus. Later, I remember I was in Washington, D.C., and I learned that the presidency was to be open. This, I think, must have been back in the early 50s sometime, about when Dr. Bunnell was getting ready to retire. And I applied then on the chance that it would be open, and as always or as usual happens in this case, a person never seeks such a position. The position has to seek him out. So it was on the third round of interest that I got what I consider a very great break indeed. Why did I want to come to Alaska? Well, I thought that in a new and developing state, there was that rare opportunity, the last one that it really existed in the entire nation, of attempting to set up a comprehensive higher educational development for an entire state. And all of the other states had this opportunity and had developed in a great variety of ways, and I was looking toward a chance to try out some own ideas of how to build a whole state system of higher education, essentially from its very beginning. And as I say, the opportunity to do this anywhere else in America had passed. And this to me seemed to be like the last great chance and the most exciting one of all, because of the geographic size of the state, because of the sparsity of population, because of the proximity of the state to Asia, and actually to Europe over the pole. I felt this just stood out as a unique and last chance opportunity for all time. Mm-hmm. And that's why I came. And in a sense, I've answered your question as mm-hmm. to what was my design. The design was to build a system of higher education for an entire state. That was the goal. Right, now I suppose the next question is, have I changed these aims over the years, and have they matured somewhat? And of course they have. They've been modified in how to do it rather than in what needed to be done. And I think the thing that has been most exciting is the fact that the absolute necessity for accomplishing the comprehensive statewide system of higher education has intensified. The need is greater than it was. Mm-hmm. I've come to see, I think, in clearer perspective than before, what I saw quite vaguely, the tremendously vital position which Alaska holds in world affairs, sitting as it does at the top of the North Pacific, and in the position really of tying together three great continents, East Asia and Northeast Asia and North Europe and North America. And as I have come to see, I think it is in the Pacific area of the world where the accommodations between the East and the West are going to be made in the next century, in the generations of the 21st century, I think this will come. If don't, man is going to victimize himself, and I think the whole world will suffer if it can't be accomplished. Because the Eastern nations, the Asian nations, are rising in importance in world affairs, and we must work with them rather than against them, and no longer is it possible for the Atlantic community to ignore the Pacific.
Dr. Wood, one of the themes of your presidency has been the function of the university on the North Pacific Rim and in the North. Where do you feel, or how do you feel the university contributes to, say, a greater understanding, and what roles do you think you as president and you as president of the university personally and professionally will direct the university and direct your own energies into solving some of these problems?
First, the university must assist directly in bringing Alaska into prominence. This is far more than simply the development of its economic resources. It is the development of its people, and it is the turning the spotlight on the centrality of Alaska in the development of this concord, I hope that it will be, between the East and the West. It's the place where you bring people together. Now, quite beyond the assistance which the university must give in the training of people for positions in government, in public service, in business, in the professions, to help to bring Alaska into that prominence, I think we must develop an attitude amongst our people of being the great arbiters, if you will, between the East and the West. We are the the people who bring others together. And we have a very special role as a people in Alaska to play. The university must reflect this in its instructional programs and its attitudes towards world affairs and towards national affairs. And we cannot become too narrowly partisan in our nationalistic in our outlook. We've got, frankly, to be more mature, more stable, more understanding than is normally expected in other parts of the country.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Wood, do you feel like this can be accomplished through, I'm sure there are many avenues, but perhaps research is accomplishing part of that, and our role is in research, the exchange of scientists. Do you foresee perhaps a school of international government, anything of that nature, to produce a flow of expertise and train people to handle the obvious problems of conducting these relationships?
Well, first we must provide the body of knowledge, the absolute understanding of the whole oceanic and land mass that we have. We must have great research here as a basis for almost anything else, and we're well on our way here to developing that type of expertise, and I think we really are only in the beginning of that, because it must be increased many, many fold and encompass the entire environment scientifically. And then I think we've got to move into the so-called people sciences. And it is here where the bright new effort needs to be made. And it is difficult indeed to conceive of what it ought to be. I'm not certain that we need a school of international service. I'm wondering if some of the old disciplines, if really pursued in genuine depth and as well as breadth, wouldn't provide the whole man, I'm searching for a word here that there is, I know, the man of the world. In its very finest connotation, a man who sees things on more than a local or a state or even a national basis, but he sees them on a broad, regional, even global basis, interrelationships of cultures. And one of the drives that I think that will assist in this for the university is to proceed to develop the North Pacific Cultural Center in its broadest manifestations, there through all of the arts and the philosophies that and the languages that we can handle.
Mm-hmm. Your own personal efforts, though, you've logged a lot of miles in working with presidents of universities in Southeast Asia, and you're about to go off again. Your own experiences are, as say, the president of an institution in an essentially pioneer land, are probably invaluable. How do you feel about your personal contribution to this kind of development in relationship to colleges and universities in Southeast Asia?
I would characterize it as the person who walked across the virgin land and said, here where we might do some plowing. I think it's been little more than that, that I have stirred some interest. I've hope to continue to stir interest in the concept, but it'll be others and much greater minds than mine that'll come after that will work out the broad outlines of action.
Mm-hmm. The structure of the university has changed radically since you assumed the presidency. Do you feel the development of the college system, the research institute, and the widespread community college system is effectively carrying out what you are seeing, continually to see as your the educational direction the university should take?
Yes, I think the most significant thing that we did was that year's study in 1960, leading to adoption in 61 by the faculty and by the regents of the so-called Stanford Plan, in which we deliberately broke up the old concept of a college of arts and sciences, and essentially went out to gain visibility for the humanities and the fine arts, for the social sciences, and for the natural sciences. And you may remember that that plan proposed what was not really new and different as far as elements of it being in existence other places in the country and had been for many, many years, but in making an overall plan for the university on the concept of tying together the theoretical and the practical into one small community of interest, small enough so that you could get enthusiastic leadership and you could get development of in that small area. And so, as you know, we tied together the business of teaching with the behavioral sciences. In other words, the theory of the behavioral sciences, the psychologies and the sociologies and the anthropologies, with the actual training of people for a particular profession. And we did the same thing in the engineering field. We tied together the physical sciences, the chemistry, the physics, the mathematics, which is the mother of all sciences, with the practice of engineering. And people told us that we were putting, these are just examples, we did that in each of those six colleges, journalism with the humanities, where I think it belongs, the business with political and political science, government and history, again, I think where it belongs. So this was done deliberately after study by the entire faculty. Remember, there were some 16 committees that formed that took in virtually everybody on the faculty at that time. We didn't have more than 100 people probably. And they spent the entire year meeting virtually every week, and they had tremendous discussions, and they came up saying, yes, with these modifications, the basic proposal in the Stanford Plan gives us a chance to break out of the traditional shell that we were in, and also, frankly, to save some administrative costs, which nobody ever looked at. Now, he saved them in this way, that there had been 10 divisions, which didn't amount very much, but they had people in charge, and they had 40 different departments of instruction. They had a very fragmented single college, exceedingly fragmented. And we combined those 40 disciplines into 30 as a beginning, and then combined the 10 divisions into six colleges. So there was an actual reduction administratively, and people sometimes overlook this. I suppose now we're at the time when we could look further and see if we ought to recombine some of these things. But I still think that the important thing was not so much the number of units that we set up as it was keeping the theoreticians and the practitioners, if I could say so, in the same general effort. Mm-hmm. And that was the key to it. Now, the other great thing that we undertook at that early stage, which it had embarrassed sort of manifestations previously in the establishment of the community colleges at Anchorage, Kenai, and Juneau, and they were on the paper, they were in being, but they were very small at the very beginning. And that was the deliberate move to develop an outreach from the university to the state so that we would become truly a state institution rather than a local institution. And in that, I think we've succeeded enormously well. If you would reflect that at statehood, I came the year after statehood, but at statehood we had probably not more than 1,200 students in all of the effort being made by the University of Alaska, and that probably included correspondence courses and a handful of people at Ketchikan and Juneau and maybe 200-300 at Anchorage and about 700 or 800 up here. The enrollment this year is well over 12,000 in academic courses working for academic degrees. And the great development on this has been outside of the main campus, although the main campus has grown manifold too. It's grown to nearly 3,000 from about, I should say, about 800 to statehood. Out in the state, it has grown from about 400 to something like 9,000 or more. In other words, you had a great desert here in the state, and a thirst for knowledge, a thirst for educational opportunity. And once you had opened the floodgates, they just absorbed all of the that you could pour out to them. And frankly, we're only part way now. For we're geared up presently on this campus and in less well elsewhere in the state, in Anchorage and Juneau and other places, to take care of no more than 50% of our high school graduates annually who go on to college. Well, that percentage of going on to college is increasing each year, and we will find that we have to bring our facilities and our faculties and our programs throughout the state up to a national level, I think, within the next very few years. National level is about 75%. The states take care of about 75% of their high school graduates who go on to college. We take care of about 50. That's increasing. We were taking care of around 45%, I think, at statehood. It's now about 53%. So it's going up, but it will increase very rapidly as the inflationary spiral seems to be continuing, as the pressure on employment increases. There's so many young people, and we're not increasing jobs comparatively, and the fact that the costs in other states have escalated is so that it's sometimes cheaper to send a person to the University of Alaska than it is to stay in his own home state. Well, conversely, Alaskans to go outside of the state to school is becoming prohibitive. I noticed that in our enrollment increase, one of the reasons why it's increased the way it has. So I think we will probably have to gear up, not for 50% as we are at present, and what our plans have been, but for 60% by the end of this decade, and by the end of the century, we'll have to be up to at least to the national average of taking care of 3/4 of all of the high school graduates of the state each year, and only 1/4 will be going outside of the state rather than 47% is at present.
One of the things I guess kind of surprised me was to know the proportion of Alaskans who are actually touched by the university through correspondence courses or extension work. This would seem to me to be an enviable record. I can't imagine the University of California touching the same similar proportion of their citizens.
Some measure of satisfaction in this. Since the first day of its operation, the University of Alaska has had some off-campus work. They've had mining extension, for instance. Marvelous thing. It's tremendously popular throughout the years and grows in usefulness, it seems to me, year by year. Whereas in other states, they've just dropped it out entirely. Well, we've had since the beginning, too, as a land-grant institution, agricultural extension, homemaking extension, and the like. These, however, have been in the early years were minimal. Now, at the moment, we're reaching annually at least 20,000 and probably 23,000 to 24,000 different persons in Alaska with some form of instruction. How many more we reach through our research and our public service, which is largely, or much of it is non-instructional, where we lend assistance in community development and this sort of thing, or how many we reach through our radio and our soon to be our educational television, how many we reach through our concerts and our publications, I don't know, but just take the instructional of around 12,000 to 13,000 academics and 9,000 to 10,000 non-credit people, the short course, you know, sort of thing. And you could exclude the conferences, which we have a continuous series here. We're reaching well over 20,000 different people in Alaska a year. Well, I don't know what the adult population is, but this must be a considerable portion of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it'd be, maybe 10% or something of this sort of the adult population. And that increases every year. More and more requests come in to provide some sort of a special service. At the same time, I get more and more pressure. So why do you spend so much money? You know, why can't you do all these things just on the cuff, so to speak? And you can't. If you're going to provide the service, there will be a cost, and this generally falls to the general taxpayer.
Do you feel that the contact that the university has to the parents of students then encourages them to send their sons and daughters here? Is this one of the reasons you feel that increasingly the university will have to take care of its own high school graduates?
Oh, this is a mixed bag. We're not doing as much with parents directly as we ought to be doing. We have gone on the assumption that the best recruiting device that the university could possibly have, and we've not really been trying to recruit students, but to provide opportunities for them that would be attractive. The best recruiting device would be the good days teaching in the classroom. That always gets back home. If it's a bad day's teaching, it gets there faster. We've tried to provide a scope of student services on the campus and even at our community colleges. But on the main campus, there's the housing and there are the activities that will give them a total learning environment situation rather than just a bare bones thing in which they come to class and then they lose contact with the institution until they come back to class the next time. We tried to set up services, financial aid, help them get jobs, help place them after they graduated. We tried to have housing, food service, as I say, the activities available to them that complement, if you will, and supplement the actual instruction. Perhaps the most significant thing has been the development of a very great, a very fine library on the main campus and under construction a similar one for the University of Alaska Anchorage.
In your, you're just about ready to enter your 12th year here. Do you feel that provincialism or geographical basis has significantly molded or limited your execution of the university's program? Do you feel that?
I think this is the most cosmopolitan university in which I've ever served, and I think it's going to continue to be so, particularly in the faculty. We must have at least 25 different nationalities represented on our professional staff. I know I went to a picnic as a guest here this last spring of our Indian community, and there were over 50 people there. I think they're at this one group, and they were having a great time, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I know that we've had at the house as guests the wives of the faculty members from other countries, and a bright light they are, believe me. And it's astonishing how many of them have. I think there were 55 or 60 that came to this little tea or party that we had, Ms. Wood had at the house. I think it's a very cosmopolitan group, and I think it's going to get there. I think that that our people who have been doing work and research are almost born internationalists, because they are an almost weekly communication with their counterparts in many other nations, and they are frequently called upon to present papers at international conferences. We've had a growing number of international conferences here on campus, and I think this is going to increase sharply. Now, all of this activity and having this kind of a cosmopolitan faculty must have an effect upon the students. And indeed, I've watched our enrollment of students from other countries increase from just a handful until this year. I think we must have altogether 90 to 100 on this one campus here, the main campus of Fairbanks. Now, this adds 11. And I think that while the student body as a whole shows a maturity beyond that as typical on many other campuses in the nation, it is not, the student body is not a provincial one at all. It is quite a cosmopolitan one. In fact, there isn't too much as provincial about the whole of Alaska. The people just aren't that narrow. If you want to have an exciting experience, go down and meet with the pioneers in their annual convention. And while they're dedicated to the pioneers, they are very broad-gauged. It's an excitement to be with them. I think that's reflected in the university, too.
Do you feel that the university, say, is being pulled very rapidly into Anchorage? I guess that's unfair to say that's provincial, because it's a growing need, and there are tremendous numbers of people there who need education. But do you feel pressured by, say, citizens groups to bring the university here or there, this kind of a provincial?
Well, I think you missed the point of my earlier remarks. It is a statewide system. Mm-hmm. And it isn't a case of rivalry between one community and another community. It is a case of building adequate facilities and faculty and programs for the major communities, and then through them of the smaller communities in the community college development. And I'm trying to avoid precisely this notion that one place has to receive more attention than some other place. Now, the headquarters, by constitution and federal and state law and everything else, will always be Alaska. It will always be here at college. But we will have to have major developments at Anchorage and Juneau tailor-made to meet their local and regional needs. Mm-hmm. And this, of course, remains, as I say, the headquarters, and this has to be the center of the environmental research, although not all research. We have some in Juneau, we'll have some in Anchorage, we have some up at Point Barrow, we'll have some at Kodiak, we'll have some at Valdez, some over in the Bering Sea area. That has to be spread. But basically, the great institutes working on the understanding of the total environment of the North are here. And not only the university and the state effort, but the national effort. And indeed, there is some international effort here in the Fairbanks area, as you know, this European satellite corporation that operates out here by Gilmore Creek area, that indicates that this is the geographical location for the effort to understand the environment of the North. It's not just state, it's national and beyond.
Mm-hmm. In changing subjects quite a bit, in every president has to go to the legislature every year. How do you feel that your relationship with the legislature has developed for the last 11 years?
I think it's deteriorated. We've had very fine support from the legislature all the time that I've been here. And the record, I think, indicates this. There has only been 1 year out of 11 which the legislature did not increase the governor's budget recommendation for the university. And the governor has always concurred when additional materials were presented for consideration of the legislature. The governor has always backed up the legislature. 1 year, I think, we got precisely what the governor recommended. He had recommended very generously that year. So our relationships have been quite good. We have, of course, been the subject of attack. Every time that a student group goes off the deep end on something, it has a direct and immediate influence on the budget effort. Every time that a faculty member exercises his right as an independent individual but yet keeps his name associated with the university, advertently or inadvertently, the university gets slugged with it. Someone does something that irritates the public, and it could be that he failed to pay his rent downtown. It could be that wasn't a nuisance in public in some manner. It could be that he said something that the PTA didn't like. It could be anything like this. And immediately, in a state where the population is small and where you have a strong central government such as we have in the state, the governor knows about it, the legislative leaders knows about it, and then I know about it. It's after that I always know about it. Mm-hmm. We've had one great break in this state. We have had a press that was stable. And they've been critical, in general they have been objective in their criticism. And they have given us enormous coverage and support editorially, enormous. And that's not just the local papers, and I say that advisedly because we've had three, but in Anchorage and in Juneau and throughout the state, we've had enormous support. I think that's a reflection again of the fact that the Alaskans believe in education, and there are some places in the country now where there's much skepticism about education, where this has happened to some of the congregations in the various sects of religion. They've lost a good bit of their faith. But in education in Alaska, the people have not only retained that faith, I think they have increased it as the university has become more visible and has been doing a better job. Part of that effort stems from the fact that we have deliberately gone out to help people where they are, rather than saying, we're going to be a castle on the hill, and if you want us, come to us. We've gone exactly the opposite direction. And this move to decentralize, to take education to the people, where it's their convenience and not the convenience of the university family itself, the university professional group, that's made the difference, I think, in understanding and relationship. You do something for people, they'll support you. If you don't do anything for you, but you're just thinking of doing things for your profession, your discipline, your institution, yourself, you lose them. And if anything has been the key to our support by the elected representatives of the people, both executive and legislative branches, it is that taking of the university to the people rather than trying to tell you, well, you come to us if you want anything.
Some of the critics in the legislature have been highly vocal. Would you characterize their, I won't say hostility, but say difference of opinion, essentially as a philosophical difference or interest difference?
First and overriding consideration is always the political one. If you have something that has had a long sustained success, the surest way to get attention is to attack it. If it's, and you attack motherhood and you get your name in the paper. And the university for a number of years, in the last decade, it was a motherhood issue. That, frankly, that the people who opposed it simply didn't get reelected. And they knew that. And so saying developed that you don't touch the university, university is a motherhood issue. Well, this was a little unfair in itself because it is not a motherhood issue. It has to stand up and take its knocks on a very real basis of whether it provides a service that the people expect and which they're willing to pay for or whether it doesn't. And so it was unfair to say it was a motherhood issue. Nevertheless, that obtained. And whenever you have that persisting, that attitude persisting for a period of time, it's inevitable that somebody is going to get the bright idea that I can get attention by attacking motherhood. And that's happened, and that's part of it. Now, the other is probably a lack of information about the university and its development. And it is a remembrance of college the way it was when the legislators were in college, either here at the University of Alaska or elsewhere. And it hasn't been that critically important to people to go out of their way to attempt to understand higher education and its contribution to today's living in this particular state. University has had, as I say, tremendous coverages in the paper. We've had films. We've had all the people go out and talk. And that's still, you get more stories that they remember that are something that went wrong than they remember of all the good things that you do. I'm told that politically, one negative voice in the legislature offsets 16 positive voices for you. Okay, now in recent years, we've had more than one negative voice come up. One, well, there's lack of information and understanding of higher education, which we ought to be able to do something more about than we have been doing. And that's one of the reasons why the decentralization process is to free my office and the vice president so that we can go out and spend time with people, interpreting the university to them, listening to their ideas, and modifying our own thinking with the good points which they will bring to us. And part of this outcry against the university in some quarters in the legislature has come from the desire to gain political preferment among one's constituents. We want to take these monies that would be spent on education and use them for something else, because that would get us stronger backing in our locality. And it's a political matter which you have to deal with. And I don't care who's president, he's always going to have to deal with this. We've been very fortunate over the past dozen years.
Do you feel in the jury action or relationship with the governor's office and the the administration in general has been better in terms of party or in terms of personality of the governor or in terms of, say, his understanding of higher education?
Oh, that's a difficult question. I think the direct answer is it's been on the basis of personal friendship with all of the governors that have been there. That's Egan and Hickel and Miller and then Egan again. This has been a rather warm, friendly relationship. I question that any of the governors that we have had ever looked at the university as the university looks at itself. And of course they should not. They've got to look at the university as a part of a whole outlay of effort that they're making. The party matter has not been significant in my judgment. In the early days, I was told that the one party would support the university and the other party wouldn't. It's not been my experience. Both parties, and both the House and the Senate, have supported, and both of them have upon occasion attacked us. And on the basis of their thinking, for good and sufficient reasons. The ability to know the chief executive of the state on a personal basis has, I think, been very, very important. I believe that the university enjoys the respects of every one of the governors, and I know the governors have enjoyed the respect of the university as a whole. And this also helps to illustrate that. We have a very strong Board of Regents. And that, incidentally, is one of the reasons why there's some disgruntlement in the legislature. They'd like to be able to dictate directly to the president of the university whom he should hire and whom he should fire, even down to the lowest ranking classified person, as well as the top professional type of person. They'd like to tell you what research you'll undertake and what research you won't. They would like, really, some of them to tell you what courses of instruction you won't teach. Go that far on it. And they even want to tell you what equipment you will buy and what equipment you won't buy. What land that you will sell and what land you will not sell. And frankly, it's been difficult at times to withstand some of these